Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 10th of August, the day after the recall elections. And we are going to be talking about the results of those elections with two guests during the course of this hour. In case you somehow missed the news, the Republicans do retain control of the Wisconsin State Senate. They won four of the recall elections. The Democrats took two. We will do a breakdown of turnout in these races, results in these races, and look at the ramifications in terms of a possible recall or the Democrats rethinking because they did not take three and switch control of the state Senate. Will they reconsider a recall of the governor of the state of Wisconsin? There was a lot of attention, a lot of national attention, as you just heard NPR reporting, Chuck Kornbach from our facility reporting on the results of the race. We'll have two guests with us. Patrick Marley joining us, the first part of the program. He has a front page story on today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Both sides see victories in hard-fought contests, in which he quotes the director of the committee to elect a Republican Senate. I think it's a huge victory for us, John Hogan. Voters gave us a mandate last fall. They backed us up again on Tuesday. Voters told us loud and clear, stay the course, things are working. Democrats, on the other hand, saying, a quote from Mike Tate, chair of the state Republican Democratic Party, we went on their turf and we won. We will not stop. We will not rest until we recall Governor Scott Walker. Later in this hour, Dennis Dreesang will be joining us, professor emeritus of political science and public affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And I know that many of you, politically sophisticated audience that you are, stayed up very late last night because the Alberta Darling Sandy Pash race was not declared until after midnight. So give us your thoughts today. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Patrick, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Yeah, good morning.
Is the story to take from this that the Democrats just could not pull it off and must be disappointed today because the Republicans retain control of the state Senate?
Well, we've got two lines of spin here.
Yes, we do.
Both sides claiming victory. Clearly, the Democrats came short of their goal, but they have taken two more seats than they had, so there's some comfort for them in that.
Tell me what was at work here, because from all reports, we had record turnout in the state, some districts more than the other, but huge turnout. It would appear to me, and maybe because most of the attention was focused on recall efforts, the demonstrations in Madison, et cetera, that a large turnout would have indicated that the wind was at the Democrats' back. Obviously, that wasn't the case.
Right. The Democrats, they did have a huge turnout effort, and a very low turnout would have been bad for them. But at the same time, when you get to that very high turnout level, what you're turning this into is a general election. And these are Republican-held districts. These are districts that have performed well for Governor Walker last fall. They're districts that have elected Republicans largely to the state Senate in the past, have done well in presidential elections. So when you get up to numbers that it is like a normal November election, you've got a turnout that seems to favor Republicans.
Mm-hmm. So the Republicans did a pretty darn good job of getting out their vote.
Yeah, both sides had their bases just absolutely fired up and were getting out the voters. There's no question about that.
What are you hearing from Democratic operatives, from Republican operatives? When I quoted what you had quoted from John Hogan and from Mike Tate yesterday, they are two completely different versions of what happened. And my next question is what you think the voters were saying yesterday.
Well, as to the first one, the Democrats really say, look, we were on the Republicans' own turf. We were trying to this was an uphill battle. We knew that all along, which I'm not sure that they were saying that during the course of the campaign. But they're saying, narrowing their margin from 1914 to 1716 is a big win. As for what this means, what the voters saying, I'm not sure that I know that. It's not a repudiation of Governor Walker, which I think is what the Democrats really were looking for here.
And what does all of this do to the recall efforts to have the governor be gone?
Well, the Democratic Party today is still talking that they want to do that, that they're going to have the recall signature gathering next year, so I don't think they're backing off from that at all. As to how that'll go, you know, it's very hard to say. It'll be hugely expensive. That's one thing I can tell you after we saw the spending in these Senate races.
It was a huge amount of money, wasn't it, Patrick?
Yeah, I think the Democracy Campaign is saying $35 million is our
current
estimate.
Goodness gracious.
We still got, you know, another week to go for the two remaining recalls. I mean, to put that in perspective, that is double all the spending in at last year's election when you had 115, 116 state lawmakers on the ballot. It's almost as much as was spent in last year's election where Walker won over Barrett, and, you know, you had tons of spending in that statewide election from outside groups then,
mm-hmm.
too.
We have two more recall elections next week. Democrats are facing recall elections. What's the common wisdom on those races now?
I'm sorry.
Common wisdom.
Oh, I think that Jim Holpern is viewed as the more vulnerable of the two, that Republicans are really focused there on trying to win that race. Bob Warch does not seem to be in trouble necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the Republicans would love to be able to take that and then say that, you know, look, yeah, we lost two, but then we gained one back, and, you know, we feel like we still have a mandate here.
Were any of the races yesterday surprises to you?
Not necessarily. I mean, Dan Capanke and Randy Hopper were always viewed as the two most vulnerable Republicans. Capanke, in general, I think everybody on both sides expected him to lose, and expectations for Hopper were pretty similar there too. After that, it got harder for the Democrats, and clearly they couldn't overtake it.
Mm-hmm. I think that you could tell there was a national reporting going on as well for the whole night. It was really interesting to be watching some television stations that were devoting their entire broadcast to what was going on in Wisconsin. And when the Luther Olson-Fred Clark race appeared to be going for Luther Olson, you could sense that it wasn't going to be the kind of night that the Democrats had hoped for.
Yeah, Luther Olson had, you know, that's a very Republican district. He's never in his career before last night drawn a Democratic opponent. I mean, he's been in the legislature 16 and a half years, never had a Democratic opponent. And in the final weeks of the campaign, it looked like he was vulnerable, and Democrats were really excited about the potential there for that race.
Yeah. It seems as though the voters in the last 6 months are giving all kinds of messages. I was interested in John Hogan's comments. Voters told us loud and clear, stay the course, things are working, but there would not have been recall elections if a lot of people didn't feel that things were working. So you hope for, well, maybe the two sides are going to get together a little more and talk to each other, and I don't think that's going to be happening.
No, I mean, at the state and national level, compromise is not in anybody's playbook right now. I mean, it's pretty toxic environment. You know, since this whole fight over collective bargaining just really created a lot of wounds between the two parties, and I don't know that having these recall elections last night is going to have healed the relationships between the state senators on the two sides.
The race that kept everybody up and our coverage going for a good strong 4 hours last night was the Alberta Darling Sandy Pash race, which, you know, all these early returns looked as though Sandy Pash was going to win this race, and then the districts where Alberta Darling is very strong came in rather late.
Yeah, that's such a split district where you've got the Milwaukee wards that are really good for Democrats, and then the Republican wards in the suburbs, and there was a lot of nervousness among the Democrats last night because Waukesha County returns came in very late, and after what happened in the Prosser race, they were in the middle of last night making some claims about voter fraud and sitting on ballots. They quickly backed off of those after midnight once all the returns came in, and there was no basis for calling them illegitimate. And at the same time, we had some Milwaukee wards that really weren't coming in Milwaukee County wards that weren't coming in until very late. So that was a nail biter.
And why did the Democrats jump on this Waukesha situation? Is it worthy of investigation at all, or were they just jumping to conclusions that were ill-founded?
If it's worthy of investigation, they need to produce some evidence, because they made these claims last night and within 45 minutes were backpedaling from them. So I'm not sure why they did them. They said, in the heat of the moment, we made these claims, but they're certainly not talking about that this morning.
Well, I know everybody wants to talk, so let's go to phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number. The email address, if you'd like to use that for Patrick Marley, is talk@WPR.org. Doug and Randolph, our first caller. Hi, Doug.
Hi. I'd just like to mention, if you take all the numbers from last night, I think there was 350,000 people voting. If you break that down, you've got 21 people in the room, and only one person out of the 20 would decide this race. In other words, I don't believe this is a mandate, and the Republicans keep calling it their mandate.
Patrick.
I'm not sure that mandate's the right word for either side here. It is really mixed results. The Republicans can't say, look, we withstood most of the recalls last night, but they have narrowed their majority. And if it holds at 17-16, if the two Democrats win next week, I mean, that is a very different environment that they have to operate in. You know, think about collective bargaining. They had one Republican in the Senate who didn't vote for that, Dale Schultz. That means, you know, the measure wouldn't have passed if they had a 17-16 majority. You know, that one vote would have put them into less than a majority vote on collective bargaining. So there's going to be, if we are at 17-16, it's going to be a lot harder for Republicans to get things through the Senate, even in that context of holding a majority.
We go to Don in Grand Rapids. Hi, Don.
Hi, I was also kind of interested in this mandate. I guess you kind of answered that question. One of the interesting statistics I saw last night was a comparison in the number of votes in these districts that voted for Walker and how they went in terms of Democrat-Republican this time. And if you look at it from that perspective, the Democrats picked up a lot of votes last night. I'm wondering how this might play into what everyone expects to be the recall of Walker and the results of that recall and what your thoughts are about that.
It's really hard to gauge what a Walker recall would look like for me at this stage. The Democrats seem to be early on when they were talking about recalling him, it sounded like it was something they were going to try to do in early 2012. Now it sounds like they're going to try to time it with the November election. So we're talking a year away from now, and a lot can happen between now and then. You know, right now they just passed this budget. There's a lot of criticism from Democrats on the budget for cuts to education and local governments, and there's a lot of Republicans saying, you know, look, this is exactly what we did. We got things on track. It's going to help the economy improve. I think that, you know, a year from now, we just don't know what the political environment's going to be like. How the economy
sure
is performing,
don't.
What's happening in the presidential race. All of those things could come into play. But the fact is, Governor Walker's a very polarizing figure right now. His base loves him. The Democrats just loathe him with a passion, and there's barely anybody in the middle on how they feel about the governor right now. So, it could be very volatile. I don't know what's going to happen there.
Thanks. Boyd in Milwaukee. Hi.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Hi, Boyd.
Hello to your guest. A couple things. While I was waiting, the gentleman brought up, it's interesting, I did not hear this until he brought it up, that I guess they're going to push back the recall effort and see what happens. And that's probably a sound decision at this point. I personally thought maybe they were just going to back off completely, A, because of the costs involved. But, you know, I think... You know, if anything, give more time to, well, let's see now, you know, if Governor Walker can, you know, back up his arguments if things really do pan out the way he and the other Republicans want. I'm wondering, though, and with the redistricting of now the voting areas, if that's going to work more in Governor Walker's favor and maybe even who the potential Republican might be, or possibly... That may not play as much of a factor because of the turnout last night. I'll take my comments up here.
Thanks, Boyd. Everyone.
Yeah, I guess it didn't make a lot of news last night because of the results of the recall elections, but Governor Walker did sign the redistricting bill last night. That creates new districts for all of the legislative districts, which every state has to do with the census results. And that is a huge boon to Republicans. It makes, their Senate seats more Republican. It helps them in the assembly. I don't know how many seats exactly it improves them with, but it makes things better for them for the fall 2012 elections. Now, that's already got a federal lawsuit challenging it. We don't know how it's going to shake out, but if it holds up, it will help Republicans undoubtedly. That would not, however, have an effect on the recall of the governor, because that's just going to be a statewide election, and it doesn't matter, you know, what district somebody's from when they're casting that statewide ballot.
Do you have a breakdown of why people went to the polls? Was it collective bargaining on the Democratic side? Was it government spending on the Republican side?
I haven't seen any exit polls that say what motivated people to get to the polls, but the campaigns were born out of this collective bargaining issue. But really, that's not what anybody was campaigning on. Neither side was bringing that issue up. All of the ads that the Democrats and the groups supporting them were talking about were what happens in the state budget: cuts to education and tax breaks for investors and for businesses, and saying, you know, they cut schools too deep while giving money to the wealthy, essentially. And Republicans were saying, stay the course. We're helping the economy. We're putting the state's finances in good shape at last. And so I think those kinds of issues were really what were on voters' minds, just because they were bombarded with those messages rather than collective bargaining. Though clearly there's a large contingent of the unions who collective bargaining was, a huge
big issue.
Force.
Oh, right.
Got them to the polls.
Yeah. Got them to Madison in huge numbers.
Yes.
Joe in Wausau, hi.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, Joe.
I was just calling in, actually, Kathleen. I believe it's the first time I've called public radio, except possibly for tickets for something, but I just can't help but wonder. I hear all of the people discussing the pros and cons of the different parties, and we watched the two parties battle over our state, really, seemingly not even listening really to the voters, but pushing a message so one-sided that there is no compromise. My wife is actually negatively affected by the collective bargaining in her position, but I can't help but think, while I'm not backing a Scott Walker, I'm thinking almost anything a person does to try to cut expenses immediately brings out the loyalists for that cause and the big negative ads that people have been listening to that are so narrow in their focus and basically unfair to parties on both sides. I can't help but wonder, though, from a personal standpoint, as soon as money gets tight, how so many of the people that do a lot of the actual legwork are the ones that are replaced, and you don't hear in the administrative part talk of cuts to any great extent. I know the county I live in, there's actually one of the poorest counties in Wisconsin, and we have 15 people with our school board, our school board that are $100,000 a year employees or better. And in such a poor county, I don't know what all of their functions are. I do know that every little town in America has to have a police chief and an under chief and a captain and all this stuff. And in our local area here, they're having a hard time filling patrolman positions, and they really don't have one or no patrolman at different times. But yet, the hierarchy stays in place.
All right, we need to hold you there, Joe. We have tons of calls this morning. Patrick.
That's the thing about government is that people don't like the spending, but they don't want any services cut. So, you have this sort of constant battle on that issue where the public wants spending to be put into place, but they don't want taxes raised, and they don't want to see anything that they try to access cut.
Patrick Marley with us for the first half hour, Madison Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And we're welcoming phone calls, 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jean in Wauwatosa, our next caller. Hi, Jean.
Hi, good morning. Thank you, Kathleen.
Sure.
Perhaps these Republicans will think differently I'm always hopeful. When these education cuts are felt for real instead of just numbers on paper, one of the schools I work in had a poster board of all the teachers and aides in the school. And there were squares for the teachers that were going to stay and the aides that were able to stay. And there were a different color for the number that were going to be cut because of these cuts. And out of, say, 24, there were four positions that were going to be gone. And that was a real reminder of these are people's lives that we're talking about. This is money we're taking out of the economy when they don't have jobs.
Patrick.
Yeah, an earlier caller asked about what's going to happen in a potential recall of the governor, and I think that what this caller is raising is an issue that will help determine that. Is there were these cuts for schools that just happened. There are $800 million in cuts. However, the Republicans point out that the school districts can make up a lot of that money through making teachers pay more for their benefits and maybe changing their insurance. And so we're going to see how that plays out in districts across the state over the next year. And that, the public will decide whether they think those were too deep or those were just right. And that would have a huge effect on what happens to the governor.
There was, as you know, Patrick, you probably saw a lot of reporters from elsewhere. There were a lot of national reporters covering this and shows devoted to this. And everybody was saying these recall elections will have national implications. Do they have national implications, and what are they?
I don't know. They could be. A lot of times, congressional special elections get seen as a bellwether for the upcoming general election, and perhaps these were as well. At the same time, part of the reason we had so many eyes on us here is that we were really the only game in town in terms of political news. I mean,
August.
It's August. There's no other elections. I don't know that, if this had been timed with the November elections last year, that there would have been this kind of attention. And this is really a unique circumstance. There's, never been anything like this in the country's history to have this many recalls over one issue at one time at the state legislative level. So given how unique it is, I don't know how much we can read into it.
Yeah. One more phone call for you. It's Bill in Wausau. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, Bill.
I'm concerned about the effect of corporate money and out-of-state money that has had on these elections yesterday. We don't see those. They won't see that data for a little while, but I'm sure that the Democracy campaign in Madison has been watching these races and the money that's flowing into them. There's more money coming from corporations and outside than is from the candidates themselves. So that's, I think we need to keep that in mind. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call, Bill.
Yeah, he's right that we don't have all the data in, and the fact is, for this kind of spending, we will never see a lot of the data. The Democracy campaign will come up with an estimate of the total spending, but the groups favoring the Republicans don't have to report by law. There are groups on the left that also don't have to report. However, most of the money for the Democrats or groups that support the Democrats came from unions who do file as PACs, so their money is reported. But there is a ton of outside spending. It seems to be about equal on the two sides, and it drowns any spending by the candidates themselves. That's absolutely true.
And poof, it's just up in the air, right? Just crazy television ads.
A lot of ads.
Oh, my gosh, there were a lot of ads. Were there a lot of ads, or were there a lot of ads?
Yeah, there were a lot.
There were a lot. Patrick, thanks very much, as always. Patrick Marley, Madison Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, who has a front page story along with Tom Tolan. Today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel looking at both sides seeing victories in hard-fought contests. We're continuing our conversation, just changing guests, so keep your phone calls on hold and join our conversation if you'd like. Dennis Dreesang is going to be joining us, Professor Emeritus of Political Science and Public Affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and the email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. The Republicans retain control of the Wisconsin State Senate, the major story, I think, to have come from yesterday's recall elections. They won four of the seats. The Democrats took two. There are two more recall elections of Democrats next Tuesday, the 16th of August. Professor Dennis Dreesang, thank you very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
So what was the message? Was it, we want to stay the course, things are working, according to the director of the Committee to Elect a Republican Senate? Or was it, we went on their turf and we won on Republican turf, according to the chair of the state Democratic Party?
All of the above. In a sense, it's kind of a win for everybody and a disappointment for everybody. I think that's the best way of reading it. We do have to keep in mind that these were recalls of Republican senators in Republican districts, some of them very, very Republican. Luther Olson has not even had a Democratic opponent for 16 years. So that's an important kind of perspective to keep in mind. We're not dealing with the state as a whole. We're dealing with certain parts of the state. And with that in mind, the Democrats certainly can claim that they made some gains and raised issues and the like. The other side of it, of course, is that the Democrats wanted to seize control of the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant that they set up a goal for themselves that was pretty challenging, and they didn't quite meet that challenge. And the Republicans can therefore say that they've got some bragging rights here, that the Democrats failed in their effort to capture the Senate, and they will maintain control of both houses of the state legislature as well as the governor's office.
We haven't talked at all this hour about the attractiveness of the candidates. Did the Democrats put up a good bunch of candidates?
Well, they did. And I think that they made a big effort. Clearly, there's a difference in terms of the candidates, the strengths of the Republicans and the strengths of the Democrats, and that does vary from one district to another. And it raises an important issue as people talk about the recall of Governor Walker. One of the things that people aren't remembering is that if indeed there is an effort to recall Walker, it's not going to be in a vacuum. It's going to be against a Democratic opponent. And the big question is, who is that going to be?
Right.
And that's, I think, probably at this point, the key question is who's going to be willing to step up and take on Governor Walker. Until that is answered, I think a lot of the speculation based on yesterday's results is really pretty much on thin ice.
And when you analyze who would be the strongest Democratic candidate against Walker, are there a lot of people who come to mind? Anybody comes to mind?
Well, there aren't a lot of people who come to mind. Ideally, you would want to have somebody who does have name recognition, because we're going to be talking about a relatively short period of time. We saw around, well, I guess the best estimates right now, probably about $35 million spent just on the Senate.
Incredible.
Recalls. And that's almost the same as the amount of money spent on the last gubernatorial election. So you're going to have a Democrat that either has money independently or is able to raise a lot of money. And there aren't a lot of people who come to mind on that grounds either. And then complicating it, of course, is that Democrats who want to run statewide are going to be looking at Senator Cole's seat.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I'm sure for some of the obvious people that one might think as a gubernatorial candidate, those are the same kind of people that you would think of as a possibility to replace Senator Cole in the Senate.
Right. I was listening to, I listen to way too much of all of this, I think. Sometimes I've suffered from lack of sleep. But there was a lot of talk in the last few days about, well, during this whole recall effort, that there's a new, in the spirit of fighting Bob La Follette, tradition in this state, and we're recapturing that, that there's a very strong progressive movement coming up again from the ashes in Wisconsin as a result of the recall efforts and as a result of what the Republican governance has done to collective bargaining.
Well, and I think that the basis for that is primarily a energizing of the Democratic base, the energizing the unions, energizing people who are concerned about corporate influence on politics, corporate money on politics, because that's, I mean, the whole progressive movement, especially as it was here in Wisconsin under La Follette, was a reaction to a machine, and it was a Republican machine, although Bob La Follette continued to work within the Republican Party, and we're talking then about progressive Republicans. But in that there's a parallel, it's really this reaction against the wealthy corporate influence on politics as well as the economy. And there are a lot of differences between then and now, but there is that parallel. And the in that there's a revival of progressivism, it would really be that same kind of reaction against big money and a kind of, then it was a Republican machine, political machine, as well as the money. I'm not sure I'd call the Republican Party a machine today.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to phone calls. We have tons of them. Jeanette in Sauk City. Hi.
Hi. I know this was touched on by the other, when you had your other guests, but I guess I would like this guest also his opinion. Now, the cuts for the education hasn't really been realized by the public, I don't think, because the kids aren't back in school, the budgets haven't really been brought out, and so on. I think thousands and thousands of very good, experienced teachers have retired, and you've got probably a lot of really young, inexperienced teachers. They're fine, but they need to be mentored by the older ones. And the class sizes, I believe, will be larger. I don't know what the test scores are going to show, but I'm afraid of that. I don't have kids, so this, you know, I'm just listening to this. But once school gets into session and parents see maybe the negative, the real negative aspect, because it'll affect their kids, do you think that is going to have any effect on the recall and everything that's happened, or do you think that will not play a part in it? Plus, I wish that they could give half of the money they make in all of this back to the state and the federal government. It would help retire the, you know, the deficit. I think this is ridiculous, the money that was spent. So I will hang up and
thanks,
make my
Jeanette.
Call off the air.
Thank you.
Well, I agree that the effects that we're going to be anticipating are in terms of the cuts to education, and there's very serious cuts, are not going to be felt immediately. It's going to be more obvious what the effects, the negative effects that people are anticipating are a year from now and 2 years from now. So in that, that becomes a campaign issue, and it certainly is likely to become a campaign issue. I think that is more salient a year from now. That having been said, there are a couple of other things we should keep in mind. One is that in a lot of the school districts around the state, the contracts with teachers that were negotiated with the unions were extended into next year. So again, the effects on individual teachers in school districts is not going to take place until those contracts expire, because once they expire, they have to be bargained under the new rules, which make collective bargaining really a non-process, a non-entity. So that's something to keep in mind. The the other thing is that, you know, the effects on testing and how students perform is sometimes down the road. I mean, you don't see that often immediately. You see that those effects sometimes 2-3 even longer down the road, and that makes it difficult to measure sometimes. And in a sense, it makes it more unfortunate because it's kind of too late. That's water over the dam.
Maybe the only thing everybody can agree on today is this amount of money spent on these recalls. Everybody can find a better use for it, right? $35 million.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Wow. Let's go to Joe in Harper's Ferry. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Say, I wonder if the professor could compare what's going on with this massive recall, the Iowa Supreme Court judges being recalled, to the parliamentary procedure and a vote of no confidence. It seems like the size of what's happening here kind of has the feeling of that. And I wonder if he could compare what's going on within our system to how they operate.
Well, Joe makes a good point. If we had a parliamentary system, number one, in a parliamentary system, there's no separation between the executive and the legislature. The governor under a parliamentary system would be a member of the legislature and would be a member of the majority party. So that whole process would be more seamless. It would be one where, indeed, if people are reacting against the leadership of the executive, it is indeed going to be take effect within the parliamentary system right away. And given the polling evidence statewide now, not dealing with specific Senate districts like we had yesterday, the polling would have suggested that, indeed, there was not a lot of support statewide for what was done, and that in a parliamentary system we would have had effects immediately in terms of a no-confidence vote. I would add to Joe's suggestion about other ways of looking at this, the situation in Ohio, which doesn't have the recall opportunity that we have in Wisconsin or that they had in Iowa with their state Supreme Court. But they've got a check in terms of the referendum, which we don't have, so that what they can do, and there are a number of others, there are 19 other states that are in this situation, where if you've got a law that gets passed and the voters really think that that was not a good idea, there's an opportunity to repeal it by having a popular referendum. We can't do that in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. So if there wasn't a lot of support for what was done, why did the election turn out the way it did? Is it just that certain districts are extremely predictable in terms of whether they're going to be Republican and Democratic, and it's hard to change people's minds?
I think that's a major factor. And then again, remember, as we were kind of pointing out before and Patrick mentioned as well, we're dealing with Republican districts where Democrats actually made a lot more inroads than they have for the last couple of decades. And Luther Olson's race is a case in point. I mean, he's never faced an opponent, and he won with 2,000 votes. So that's if you're looking for indicators of popular support, that's an important kind of indicator. He won, and that's bottom line, and that's important in terms of controlling the Senate. But the other side of it is that, boy, there even in that kind of a district, there was a lot of opposition that was expressed.
Here's an interesting email from Victoria in Green Bay. No, that's not the one I wanted to read. Where is it? Oh, darn. Let's go. Oh, here we go. I'm a fiscal conservative. This is from Victoria in Green Bay. So I agree with Walker's handling of the budget, but I disagreed strongly with his union busting techniques. Kohl voted for Walker's programs, some of which I disagreed with, but he stayed in Wisconsin and did his job. We cannot, in this democracy, have a recall every time we disagree with the way our representatives vote. That's ludicrous. He won the first election, and he shouldn't have been required to win a second.
Well, the whole idea of a recall is actually mainly that your representative, whomever you elected, is not representing you any longer on key issues. And so I think that the recall was perfectly appropriate. It's not an effort to get rid of people because of a scandal. For that, we've got impeachment processes, and there you want to prove guilt and innocence. And so that's a different, whole different process. Recall is set up so that if people, for whatever reason, feel like they are not being represented in the way they thought they were going to be represented when they voted for the person in the first place, that person is to be removed from office. And, of course, part of the issue, too, is the threat of, so that hopefully senators, representatives, chief justices, I mean, justices of the court, the governor, anybody else that we elect has in mind that there's the potential issue of accountability here.
More phone calls in a moment. Dennis Driesang, professor emeritus of political science and public affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, is our guest. We're talking about the results of yesterday's recall elections. And here's how you reach us. Our phones are really busy, so just keep trying. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program, how often do you get a chance to talk about Lucille Ball? It would have been her 100th birthday, as you know, last Saturday. So we're going to be talking about this groundbreaking female comedian. I've had a chance to, because I knew we were going to do these shows, watch some I Love Lucy shows the past few days, and I've just been laughing. I think she was really funny. And I had no idea that Buster Keaton helped train her because he saw the physical comedic genius in Lucille Ball. So we're going to talk about Lucille Ball and that long-running television show the second hour of our program. Back to phone calls. Our next caller is Tim in Broadhead. Hi, Tim.
How you doing?
All right, Tim. How are you?
Oh, I don't know. A little upset. You know, it's this thing about this recall nonsense. The only thing, Republican, Democrat, I'm conservative, you get out of Madison and things change a little bit. But this whole thing about the teachers and their unions and all this all we're looking for to do, okay, is basically just you pay your end like I have to pay mine, you know, instead of us. I guess it's just a matter of, you know, get your hands off my wallet, pay your own way, and forget all this nonsense about what we owe you, and, you know, things would go a whole lot smoother.
You don't think teachers are paying their own way?
Public unions in general, whether it's water, teachers, any of them, fire, police, you know, that's just my personal view is it isn't like it used to be. Things are changing, and, you know, pay your own insurance. You want to belong to a union, you know, that's up to you, but you make those payments. Don't leave it up to the state. We just don't have it anymore.
Okay. Dennis?
Well, sort of, I mean, obviously we've got a sentiment here that is pretty anti-public employee, it sounds like, and is forgetting a couple of important facts. Number one, when we're talking about the collective bargaining rights and collective bargaining process, we're not necessarily talking about increases in compensation. We're not talking about people being overcompensated. In fact, if you take a look at the last 5 years, the contracts with state employees in all of the different categories and with teachers has been over how much they are going to have as a decrease in their compensation. There haven't been major increases. There have been increases in the amounts that they've contributed to retirement and to health care. So And that's been true in the private sector as well, where you get companies saying we're going to move or whatever. You don't move state government or school districts, so that's not a viable threat or an option. But in the private sector, these threats have indeed generated collective bargaining over the amount of decreases in compensation. The other thing is that when you talk about state employees, we're talking about people with a wide range of different pay ranges, and just the effects of the furloughs that were forced on public employees made a lot of public employees who were obviously in the lower and some of them actually in the mid-range become eligible for food stamps, for various kinds of welfare programs. And, you know, when you sort of think about, well, gee, is that a good employer who is making his or her employees eligible for welfare programs by having these kinds of cuts? That doesn't make sense, and particularly when it's a situation where we, on the one hand, say to these employees, we're going to cut your compensation and make you eligible for welfare, and on the other hand, we're going to then dip in our other pocket and pay you the welfare that that you're now
right.
entitled to.
Yeah, it doesn't quite connect, does it?
No.
No. Tom in Burlington. Hi.
It was really unfair in getting to your point that Mr. Walker didn't make everybody. He was afraid to touch the police department, the fire department, with sacrifices. And the thing is, FDR, the great Democrat, he was afraid to have the public employees have unions, which is kind of surprising, because he felt that they had a pipeline into the taxpayer's pocketbook, and they also had really no incentive they could strike. So I don't know, you might talk about that, but the reason I called here was one of the problems with the gridlock we have in the state and in Washington, D.C., is because we have this gerrymandering of the districts, the state, the boundary lines of each of these districts. And I wonder, is there a way that we could make it, how would we make the reapportionment of districts even fairer, and how could we go about doing it in a fair sort of way?
Well, just real quickly on FDR, I mean, that whole period of time that you're talking about there, the idea of public employees unionizing was a very, very strange idea. I mean, Wisconsin kind of pioneered that in the late 1950s, and the federal employees still don't have the collective bargaining rights that were enjoyed in state governments, particularly in Wisconsin, prior to the changes. But on redistricting, there are a number of models outside of Wisconsin. One of them is in Iowa, where what you do is you have the redistricting done and mapped out by a nonpartisan body. So we don't have to invent the wheel here. We can look to Iowa. We can look to New Jersey. We can look to California now. And see how you can set up commissions, either they're independent or they're kind of nonpartisan. My favorite is New Jersey's, where you've got a commission where you have half Republicans, half Democrats, and then the tiebreaker is a professor of political science.
It's funny.
I think it's great.
Thanks, Tim, very much for your call. I'm trying to get. Let me get your view on what did you think was going to happen yesterday? You study all of this. Were you surprised that the Republicans held control, considering the amount of organization that the Democrats appeared to have, and the level of being really upset and marching on in Madison? We had these huge demonstrations. Or did you think this was about the way it was going to come down?
Well, I think that there were a couple of districts where you expected that there might have been an opportunity for Democrats to pick up a seat where they didn't. One of them was the Luther Olson seat, and that was kind of an unknown in many ways because he had never really faced an opponent before. The other was with the Alberta Darling Sandy Pash race. And there, on the one hand, the idea that you would have a long-term incumbent, Alberta Darling, who's co-chair of Joint Finance, who got a lot of financial support, nonetheless was really pretty threatened in that district. And it looked like there was a possibility for a pickup there. The other districts were much more safely Republican. And the ones that did turn, La Crosse is really much more of a Democratic district than the others. The Randy Hopper's district is, again, that's a Republican district, but there were a variety of issues that were going on there.
Right.
And that his that whole race, too, is a reminder that people vote for different reasons, all sorts of different reasons.
Yeah. Well, on we go. We need to have you on more often. This was good.
Well, thank you.
It's good to have political science professors on. They can do all kinds of things, right?
That's right, including, you know, determine redistricting.
Thank you for being with us.
You bet.
Our guest this half hour, Professor Dennis Driesang, Professor Emeritus of Political Science and Public Affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And we thank Patrick Marley, Madison Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And thanks for all of your calls, everybody. There were just way too many to handle all of them, as you can imagine, the day after historic recall elections in the state. Thanks to Chrissy Peace for producing this hour, and thanks to Chrissy Peace for on-air production in our downtown Milwaukee studios. Thanks for all of your calls. We have news coming up, and we'll return, and then we're going to laugh.